Hello, this is Richard Davis, welcoming you to At Home This Morning, our magazine programme for older listeners, which we hope will also be of interest to the not so old. Well, this edition is going to be something of a what's on, because we'll be hearing about various concerts that you can go to over the next 2 or 3 months. But we'll also be hearing some more from local filmmaker Phil Grabsky about his career in the industry. As usual, we'll be giving out various email addresses, website addresses and telephone numbers during the course of the programme. So you may like to have pencil and paper handy so that you can write them down. So let's hear about our first concert. It's on Saturday, February the 3rd. It's in aid of the Samaritans, and one of the groups participating is the Brighton Welsh Male Voice Choir. One of the other participants is local mezzo-soprano Fiona Honeysett, who likes to be known as Fee to her friends. And she was one of the people involved in organising the concert. To find out more, I went to see Fee recently, and I began by asking her if the concert had been her idea.
I think it was a bit of a mix, really. Samaritans are trying to promote people singing as I think as a bit of a way of boosting well-being, and also it's just a really great kind of thing to do to get people together and raise awareness for Samaritans as well. I think there's a few sort of musical people in the Brighton branch of Samaritans, and I think we just kind of put some ideas together. One of the volunteers, Robert, is part of the Brighton Welsh Male Voice Choir. I have to have that written out in front of me. It's a bit of a mouthful. And the Ouse Valley Singers. So it was himself, he's a lovely chap, that suggested getting his choirs together. And then I just offered, being a singer, that I could do a few solos in it. So that's kind of where it came from. It's the 50th anniversary of the Brighton branch of Samaritans this year, so I think a lot of people have been very busy trying to get things in a diary and put together for this year. The concert's called Love Is a Concert, so it's kind of in keeping with the Valentine's theme of February as well, which is nice.
You're quite an experienced singer, I gather.
Perhaps some people might say that. I did a music degree, quite a while ago now, 2009. I'm at the University of Aberdeen. I did that for 4 years, trained as a singer there. I've sang with Scottish Opera before, their sort of youth programme, the National Youth Choir of Scotland, involved in lots of things at university, so sort of different theatre productions, Gilbert and Sullivan. Did quite a lot of Baroque music as well. But yeah, I haven't been doing it as much recently. I do a bit of music therapy. That's kind of my bag at the moment. I also work in mental health, which is another reason why I'm so interested and passionate about Samaritans as a charity and pretty amazing kind of service for people, really.
And you're studying at Sussex University?
Yes, I'm back studying again, so I'm busy. So I'm doing a postgraduate in mental health practice, which I have a lovely bunch of colleagues on that course and some great lecturers. So after that, I'm hoping to go on to train to be a psychotherapist for my sins. But yeah, it's all very interesting.
OK, well, let's get back to the concert then.
Yeah.
I see on the poster here it says you're a guest soloist and you're a mezzo-soprano. What are you going to be singing?
I'm going to be singing O Mio Bambino Caro by Puccini, a well-known song. I think Maria Callas sang it, and Kirita Kanawa. I'm not sure if I'm going to be able to sing it in the original key because it's quite high for a mezzo. Actually, it's originally a soprano aria. But we'll see how I'm feeling on the day. I might sing it a bit lower. I'm going to sing a lovely lead by Schumann called Die Lotusblume, which is the lotus flower. And, the Habanera from Carmen, which is always a fun one to sing. You can be a bit cheeky in that one. And I'm going to do a bit of a crowd pleaser as well. I'm going to do I Dreamed a Dream, which I'm sure some of you will know from Les Miserables. And I think it was made famous by Susan Boyle as well. So, yeah. So, four kind of quite well-known ones. Probably the Schumann's a less-known one, but it's very very pretty and all in keeping with the sort of love theme of the concerts.
And are you singing with either of the choirs or just on your own?
I'm not. I'd be very happy to, but I think I'm just singing by myself, actually, yeah. So it'd be lovely to hear them as well.
Do you know what they're going to be singing?
Oh, I should have probably brought that along. I think, again, lots of songs in keeping with the theme of love. I don't think they're all Welsh songs, but I think quite a lot will be. So are they doing like Carrick Fergus and Bread of Heaven, all those kind of Welshy songs. I think there's a few Scottish numbers in there, which I was pleased to see. I think Near Risque Love Lilt, which is a lovely kind of Scottish folk song. Yeah, lots of lovely songs are in their programme, but come along and hear it. It'll be a surprise.
So concert's on Saturday, February the 3rd.
Yeah, that's correct. Yeah, 7:30.
And it's at the Church of the Good Shepherd in Dyke Road, which is quite easy to get to by bus, but as it says on the poster, there's not that much in the way of parking available around there, although you can park in the streets if you're lucky. And how can people get tickets?
Well, they can get them at Eventbrite, so that's eventbrite.co.uk, and they're £10. I think if you type into the internet, Love is a concert in support of Samaritans, or just put Love is and Eventbrite, Brighton maybe, it should come up. I have Googled it myself. So, yeah, it'd be lovely to see as many people as we can there, so kind of supporting the concerts and the Samaritans. And also it's just a nice way of just kind of maybe exploring what love is for you. It is a nice kind of nice theme, I think.
So it should be a nice, heartwarming concert for everybody.
Yeah, hopefully. Yeah, hopefully not too gooey, but yeah.
You were saying earlier on that the Samaritans are promoting the idea of people singing. Can you expand on that at all?
I think they've called it Singing for the Samaritan. So I think you could, if you're interested, look on their website. If you'd like to even just in a lunch break get a few of you together, it could be at Christmas, singing some Christmas carols, or any time during the year, really, just get a few of you together and raise some funds for the Samaritans. It'd be great. Or if you've got a local choir, school kind of choir, anything really, it'd be a great way to get everyone together and raise some funds for a great organisation.
So the idea is not people singing together as a therapy, but singing together as a fundraiser.
Yeah, as a fundraiser, but I suppose the kind of therapeutic nature of singing comes into it really, doesn't it? I think lots of people find singing just a way of getting together with people and being able to express themselves and sort of ventilate things that they might just have on their mind. Yeah, it's also, which is a great way to reminisce as well, isn't it? Music can prompt lots of different memories for us.
Singing certainly makes you feel good, doesn't
it? Yeah, it does. Yeah, it's such a as well as the sort of emotional side of it, I think it's a very physical thing as well, which is all kind of ties into our mood, I think. Yeah.
Okay, well, thanks, Fia. I hope the concert goes well.
Thank you very much.
I've been talking to Fiona Honeysett about the concert in aid of the Samaritans in which she's appearing. Also appearing are the Brighton Welsh Male Voice Choir and the Ouse Valley Singers. The concert's on Saturday, February the 3rd at the Church of the Good Shepherd in Dyke Road, and you can get tickets from the Eventbrite website, which is eventbrite.co.uk. Well now, if you heard the previous edition of At Home This Morning, you may remember that I talked to local filmmaker Phil Grabsky about the series of fine art TV programmes that he's produced, which are running on ITV at the moment on Thursday evenings, starting at 10:45. The series goes on until February the 1st. While Phil was in the studio, I took the opportunity to find out about his background as a filmmaker, and I began by asking him how he got into filmmaking in the first place.
I was very influenced by my sister's husband, who was a very good amateur photographer. And from 14, 15, I wanted to be a photographer myself. And I remember at school, they were trying to encourage me to study English at university, and I said, no, I want to be a photographer. And this was quite unusual at the time. And I had to kind of overcome some resistance from my own school. Nevertheless, I got myself into a photography and film college in London and actually swapped pretty quickly to film. And whilst I was at this particular college, I actually made my my first film, which was about the Dalai Lama of Tibet. Quite an interesting choice. And when I finished college, I had this finished film, which I then sold to ITV. Some of the regional stations showed it. And then I was asked to make a film about Gibraltar, of all places. And to make that film, I had to have a limited company to sign the contract. And I was up and running as an independent filmmaker, an independent production company, which we've now been going for, 32 years. When I make films about artists, you can always see how technology plays a part, history plays a part. And it was exactly the same with me. I was very fortunate because when I came out of film college, Channel 4 had just started. And Channel 4's remit was to only work with independent producers. Whereas before that, you had the regional stations for ITV, you had the BBC with their in-house production teams who were expert. But to work your way up through there could take you 20 years. Channel 4 was completely different. And I was very lucky, again, because I managed to work with a commissioning editor, a guy called Michael Atwell, who was inspirational. And not only that, but he had the power. This is where things have changed. He had the power to commission. If he liked your idea and he said yes, 95% of the time, then that would then be made. And it was all done much more seriously. You'd come in for a meeting and they'd say, okay, let's work together and work out what the budget should be. Now it's all changed. Now there's all these levels of management. They try to get things as cheaply as possible. By the time they make a decision, which can take 2 or 3 years, they want it in 3 months because they suddenly realize they've got a gap in the schedule. And there are still fantastic programs made, and it's all credit to the program makers. But it is a lot harder than it used to be. I was lucky with Channel 4. And, of course, Channel 4 then changed things at the BBC, changed things at ITV. Channel 5 came along. And actually, bizarrely, it was Channel 5 that rang me in 1997 and said, we'd like you to make us a series of films about the Impressionist painters. Because they had to do 26 hours of arts a year. And they rang me up and said, look, you know, we've got to fulfill our quota. We'd like eight programs on the Impressionists. And they put them out on a Sunday afternoon. And they were so successful. There was such an audience for them that they then put them out at peak time. And we ended up making four Channel 5 and then actually for Sky Arts with a presenter called Tim Marlowe. We ended up making about 130 programs. And then that gradually became the cinema series exhibition on screen.
So why did you move over from TV to the cinema?
A couple of reasons why I moved over to the cinema. First of all, from 2006, I was making cinema films about composers, Mozart, Beethoven, Haydn and Chopin. Probably the series of films of which I'm most proud. Each of them took 2 to 3 years to make. I interviewed 60, 70 of the world's leading musicians and filmed them performing for each of those films. And in the cinema, they just look absolutely fantastic. And again, because of technology, it was possible to distribute. I no longer had to distribute on 35mm or 16mm, which would have been impossible. You could distribute now on DVD. Cinema has changed enormously in the last 10 years because of digital technology. We used to be hamstrung by the fact that we had to distribute on 16mm or 35mm film, which was a very expensive, difficult, heavy way of distributing films. Now, we show off little hard drives. I mean, we're in 60 countries with exhibition on screen, and we send them a hard drive where the quality is essentially the same as I'm seeing in the post-production suite. This is unbelievably fantastic. It's never been like this before. You've never been able to see artworks in this detail on a big screen. I mean, frankly, the technology does not need to get any better. There'll be companies from Japan trying to tell you that you need Ultra HD, you need 8K, 12K. You don't. It is as good as it needs to be now. We're very fortunate.
You mentioned there were a couple of reasons why you swapped from TV to the cinema. What was the second reason?
A few years ago, the cinemas were controlled by studios saying, we have to have all the slots. you've got to show our films for a week. This has all changed now, and largely it's changed because of digital technology and also something called event cinema. Event cinema includes the Metropolitan Opera in New York, the Royal Opera House in London, National Theatre London, Bolshoi too, I should mention. So now event cinema, initially this was based on the idea of a live broadcast, and to some extent that still happens, but more than 50% of event cinema is now recorded films. Exhibition on screen, of course, are recorded, are proper cinema films that play in this space. And we get two screenings, and we're in 250 cinemas. Now, this is fantastic. For example, the next film coming out at the end of January is a film about Cézanne, playing in 250 cinemas from big 1,000-seaters right down to small 50-seaters or 100-seaters. When I put the composer films into the cinema, I used to get such a fantastic reaction from audiences. I mean, it was just overwhelming. We put Mozart and Beethoven out in Australia. It ran for 6 months, sometimes playing four times a day. 6 months, unbelievable. And so I thought to myself, you know, I think I can do the same with these art films. You know, we were at this point working with the big exhibitions coming through London. We were making television programs about them, the Tate, things at the National Gallery, things at the Royal Academy. And I thought, I can make a big film, a cinema film about one of these exhibitions, about the artist that the exhibition is about, and put that in the cinema. And where better? I mean, I love television, and DVD is still a fantastic medium. I watch DVDs all the time, but there is no better place to watch a film than in the cinema, where the quality is fantastic. Obviously, the screen is big and wonderful. These days, particularly, the audio has got much better. And also, a couple of other things. First of all, you've already made a commitment to sit there for 90 minutes. So you're not constantly distracted. You're not worried about checking your phone or making a cup of tea or having a chat. You actually do concentrate and engage with it emotionally. And I think that's a fantastic thing. And secondly, I'm an enormous advocate for cinemas in terms of their role in our communities and as a community experience. You know, we don't go to banks so much. We don't go to post offices so much. We don't perhaps even go to pubs so much. Where are we meeting people? You get on a train to London these days and everyone's on their phone. You can't strike up a conversation with anybody. So I think community and conversation has diminished, perhaps. Anyway, you go to the cinema and it's a community experience. The best cinemas, and we have lots in and around Brighton. If you go to somewhere like the Rope Tackle in Shoreham or Hawkshurst, or I mean there's many, and of course the Duke of York's and the Comedia, and you might bump into people you know, you might sit next to people you know, you have a coffee and you might strike up a conversation with someone about the film. With our art films, we have people who deliberately sit next to people that they don't see at any other time, and then they go and have a coffee with them afterwards and they talk about the film. So it's a wonderful place to show our films, and as I say, this is evidenced, you know, illustrated by the fact we're now in, well, 248 cinemas from the top of Scotland to the far reaches of Cornwall. And we're just getting new cinemas all the time. And it could be village halls. The main art house chains, Kerr's and Everyman Picture House, they are constantly going around the country trying to buy up new cinemas. Or if they see a bank that's shut down on a high street, they're looking into them, turning it into a cinema. There's a reason for that. The reason is that cinema, for them, is a commercial business because the audiences want to go to the cinema. And they don't just want to see the blockbusters. They want to see cultural films like Exhibition on Screen.
I've been talking to Phil Grabsky about his life as a filmmaker. Phil's series of films on the subject of great art continues on ITV on Thursday evenings at 10:45 until February the 1st. If you'd like to find out about Phil's other films, you can get more information from the Exhibition on Screen website. Well, I expect you know the old joke about buses, that you wait for ages and then several turn up at once. Well, it seems to be the same in this area with concerts. You'll remember that at the start of the programme, I was telling you about a concert which is taking place on February the 2nd in aid of the Samaritans. Well, in fact, before that, on January the 28th, is the first concert in the second half of the Brighton Philharmonic Orchestra's season of Sunday afternoon orchestral concerts at the Dome. Here's the Brighton Philharmonic Society's General Administrator, Catherine Stead, to tell us more.
What better way is there to spend a chilly winter's afternoon than by attending one of the Brighton Phil's enjoyable Sunday afternoon concerts at Brighton Dome and being entertained and moved by some wonderful music played by some very talented professional musicians. We're now halfway through our current season, which runs from October to March, and thanks to a generous grant from the John Carew Brighton Orchestra Trust, we're already planning our next season. Over the next four concerts, the orchestra will whisk Dome audiences away on a musical journey around the world and back and forth through the centuries, with glorious music by the likes of Haydn, Mozart, Beethoven, Schubert, Mendelssohn, Dvorak, Tchaikovsky, Glinka, Mussorgsky, Sibelius, Malcolm Arnold, Delibes and Saint-Saëns, as well as less well-known composers such as Alexander Aratunian, an Armenian whose fabulous trumpet concerto, which we perform on the 4th of March, is a real showstopper. Our first concert of the new year takes place on Sunday the 28th of January, when we're joined by Michael Collins, one of the foremost clarinetists of his generation, as both conductor and soloist. Those of you with long memories may recall he won the Woodwind Prize in the very first Young Musician of the Year in 1978, at the tender age of 16. The concert opens with one of Haydn's London symphonies, Symphony No. 102, one of 12 symphonies written in 1794 on a visit to England. Rarely performed, it opens with stately grace and progresses to joyous vigour, and is regarded as one of his finest symphonies in both scope and scale. Beethoven's elegant and expansive Symphony No. 1 is clearly influenced by the composer's teachers, Haydn and Mozart. First performed in 1800 in a concert he arranged himself, it impressed the Viennese public with Beethoven's incredible talent. The form of the symphony pays homage to his teachers, whilst at the same time pushing the boundaries of symphonic composition. Michael Collins does double duty as both soloist and conductor in Mozart's evergreen Clarinet Concerto, a work of exquisite beauty and zest that has become one of the most popular pieces in the repertoire. Completed just 2 months before Mozart's death for his friend, the clarinetist Anton Stadler, its exquisitely tender slow movement has featured in the soundtracks of films such as The King's Speech and Out of Africa, and often appears in the top 10 of Classic FM's Hall of Fame. On Sunday the 11th of February, we'll be performing a concert of unashamedly romantic music to get everyone in the mood for Valentine's Day. And we're delighted to welcome Howard Shelley back to Brighton as both conductor and pianist. Regular audience members will recall that on his last visit to the Dome with the Brighton Phil 2 years ago, performing Shostakovich's Piano Concerto No. 2, he created quite a stir by directing the orchestra from the piano using a digital score on an iPad with a Bluetooth foot pedal. This time, he opens proceedings with Schubert's ever-popular Unfinished Symphony No. 8. Schubert started composing it in 1822, but put it aside to concentrate on other works, leaving it unfinished at his death 6 years later. We are left with two remarkable movements that herald the dawn of the Romantic Symphony. Mendelssohn wrote his first piano concerto aged just 21 on a trip to Italy, at the same time as composing his Italian Symphony. And its urgent, irrepressible opening seethes with the dynamism of impetuous youth. Franz Liszt famously played it at sight in a piano showroom before going on to perform it many times in public to great acclaim. one of the great vehicles for the piano virtuoso, it is the perfect showcase for the dazzling technique that has made Howard Shelley one of the country's truly great artists. Our concert ends with Dvorak's Symphony No. 6, full of rich melodies, lively rhythms and vivid orchestral colour, incorporating the folk music of his native Bohemia, now modern-day Czech Republic, within a classical romantic form. Premiered in 1881, this lush and confident work contributed greatly towards establishing him as one of the foremost composers of his generation, and provides a fitting conclusion for a programme that charts the evolution of the Romantic Symphony. For our penultimate concert of the season, on Sunday the 4th of March, we welcome back popular guest conductor Stephen Bell to explore the opulent riches of Russian music in a programme of well-known and less familiar works that will make you wonder why you've not come across them before. Our concert opens with two works celebrating the Russia of the Tsars. Glinka's characteristically Russian-sounding overture from A Life for the Tsar displays the heroic nobility suggested by the opera's story of a young Russian peasant who saves the Tsar from a group of Polish kidnappers, whilst Mussorgsky's demonic tone poem Night on a Bare Mountain depicts a witch's Sabbath in music of quite terrifying power and energy, which was used in the penultimate scene of Walt Disney's Fantasia. Gareth Small, principal trumpet of the Halle Orchestra, joins us as the soloist in Alexander Aratunian's Virtuosic Trumpet Concerto, written in 1950. This fabulous showpiece concerto, with its soulful, beautiful melodies, technical difficulties and exciting gypsy-like sound, is often used as an audition piece. Our concert closes with one of Tchaikovsky's most famous symphonies, No. 4. Intensely personal and expressive, it's a work of monumental scale and beauty that nevertheless has a delicacy and sensitivity that have made it one of the most popular of all symphonies. Our season draws to a close on Sunday the 25th of March, when conductor laureate Barry Wordsworth returns for a memorable concert full of irresistible tunes and toe-tapping rhythms to celebrate his 70th birthday with his beloved Brighton Philharmonic. The concert opens with the sweeping grandeur of the Finnish landscape, incomparably evoked by Sibelius in his Karelia suite. Written early in his career, based on folk tunes and inspired by the great wilderness of southeast Finland, this is one of his most popular pieces and includes the exhilarating Alla Marcia. The virtuosic piano duo, Warby and Farrell, join the orchestra to perform Malcolm Arnold's Piano Concerto No. 104, a work full of zest and humour, which was originally written for three-handed piano duo Cyril Smith and Phyllis Selick, Stephen Warby's teacher, and was first performed by them at the Proms in 1969. Barry Wordsworth then unveils his own suite based on the score of Delibes' delightful comic ballet Coppelia, a cascade of sprightly, witty and tender melodies. Finally, Warby and Farrell rejoin the orchestra to perform Saint-Saëns' brilliant Carnival of the Animals, which ends both this concert and our current season. Familiar to many, this hugely entertaining creation conjures up a musical menagerie with a parade of creatures drawn with imagination and insight, wittily narrated by the piano duo, who've brought it up to date with modern-day cultural references that include climate change, iPads, and I'm a Celebrity, Get Me Out of Here. On the morning of this, our final concert of the season, we will be holding our annual free open rehearsal for children, an exciting introduction to classical music and the instruments of the orchestra, using extracts from Carnival of the Animals and Coppelia, and a brass fanfare by Malcolm Arnold that includes the tune of Sussex by the Sea. As part of the orchestra's education programme, a number of interactive workshops led by our musicians are being held in local schools this term, and the open rehearsal is the culmination of the work done there. Places for the rehearsal do need to be booked in advance, as we expect several hundred children to attend, but there is no charge, and we'd love to see lots of parents, carers, siblings, grandparents and teachers come along too for this inspiring and entertaining event. So please put the date, Sunday the 25th of March, in your diaries now, and you can find more details on how to book and also on discounted prices for children and accompanying adults for the afternoon concert on our website nearer the time at www.brightonphil.org.uk. Tickets for all the Brighton Philharmonic's concerts are available from the Brighton Dome ticket office in Church Street, and you can buy them in person, over the counter, or by telephone on 01273 709 709 or online at www.brightondome.org. If you go into the ticket office and pay cash, you won't have to pay any fees or admin charges. Tickets range from £12 to £38, and there's a 50% discount for students and under 18s. You can purchase a family ticket, where two children can attend for just £1 each, and anyone who's registered disabled is entitled to a free ticket for a companion. Group discounts are available if you're booking 10 or more tickets for a particular concert, and part season tickets are still available for the last four concerts of the season, costing around 20% less than buying single tickets for each concert. Just a quick word on parking. A real incentive for those attending our concerts by car, which you may not have heard about, is heavily discounted parking at the NCP Church Street car park. The standard fee for 4 hours parking there on Sundays is normally an eye-watering £26, but our concert attendees can enjoy a reduced rate of just £6 for up to 5 hours, provided they park between the hours of 1 and 6pm. This rate applies to all Brighton Philharmonic concerts at the Dome, and all you need to do is collect what's called a follow-on ticket from the Dome at the concert, which you then put in the parking machine when you leave, and it reduces the cost down to just £6. You may not be aware that before each of our concerts, local author and freelance journalist Louise Schweitzer conducts a pre-concert interview with our guest soloists, giving you a fascinating insight into the life and career of a professional musician immediately before they perform. Tickets are just £3.75, and the interviews take place at 1:45 on the day of the concert in Brighton Museum, just next door to the Dome. Louise has been attending Brighton Philharmonic concerts since she was a child and vividly remembers her first concert at the Dome when Herbert Menges conducted Beethoven's Eighth Symphony. Away from her writing, she describes herself as an amateur pianist, choral singer and very accidental organist, and she's also a regular drama and classical music reviewer for the Argus. So just to recap on the dates of our next four concerts at the Dome, these are Sundays the 28th of January, 11th of February, 4th of March and 25th of March, with all concerts starting at 2:45 and lasting for a couple of hours with an interval. Tickets are available from Brighton Dome Ticket Office in Church Street, telephone number 01273 709 709, or you can book online at www.brightondome.org. If you would like to find out more about any of our concerts or about the orchestra, our website is www.brightonphil.org.uk, And we're also on Facebook as Brighton Phil and on Twitter as @BPO_orchestra. Our office is in George Street, Brighton, and our email address is mail@brightonphil.org.uk. Thank you very much for listening, and I hope that I've whetted your appetite with this preview and that you'll come and join us, the Brighton Philharmonic Orchestra, at Brighton Dome one Sunday afternoon.
Thanks, Catherine. Well, I certainly will. I'm not going to repeat everything that you said in terms of contact details, but I'll just repeat the fact that tickets for the Brighton Philharmonic's concert are available from the Dome Ticket Office in Church Street, whose phone number is Brighton 709 709. That's 01273 709 709. Or you can book online via the Dome website, which is www.brightondome.org. That's www.brightondome.org. And that brings us to the end of our programme for this time. Thank you very much for listening. I hope you've enjoyed everything you've heard in this edition of At Home This Morning, our magazine programme for older listeners. There'll be another edition in a fortnight's time. Well, it now only remains for me, Richard Davis, on behalf of Grey Matters Productions, who make this programme for Radio Reverb, to thank everyone who's taken part in the programme. Once again, to thank you for listening. And until we meet again, to wish you all the very best. Goodbye.
At Home This Morning is a Grey Matters production for Radio Reverb.